You're listening to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to the creator of the Walk Like a Geocacher video. We give you an update on the Wagga Mega event. And we tell you how to get a free routable map for your Garmin GPS. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 45 of GeoTalk, and it's the middle of April, and by now, of course, you probably noticed that you get home from work and it's dark, and if you want to go out geocaching, you have to grab a torch, or even if you do it on the weekends, you don't seem to have as many hours as you used to. But, well, c'est la vie, that's it. Summer's over. We're heading into winter. Talking about getting out geocaching, I went out with Zach and Nay, and we did a bit of a milestone cache on the weekend. We hit our 1,300th cache. It's a bit of a tongue twister. And it was a real fun one. I decided, you know, I wanted the three of us to go out and do this one. And we wanted to have a little bit of a walk. And most of you who listen to the show in Australia know that in New South Wales, we're not meant to be geocaching in national parks. And it's a little bit hard when you're looking for a decent walk, particularly in the Blue Mountains, to find one that isn't in a national park. But there are a few tucked away. And I'm going to give a plug to a cache called Laughing Waters. And I'll give you a link in the show notes. It's just north of Katoomba, and it's a fantastic walk. It is family friendly, although if you've got little kids, you have to be a little bit careful because there are some sharp drop-offs near the edge of the path in parts. But yeah, we had a great time. And if you go to the website, geotalkpodcast.com, you'll see a photo of the three of us out on that walk. And if you've got any of your own milestones that you want to give a shout out, either for yourself or for somebody else who's reached a milestone, it doesn't have to be a certain number of caches. It could just be a particular cache or an anniversary or maybe even a first to find. Don't forget, you can call it in. All you need to do is grab your mobile phone and you need to dial 02 for Sydney and then 850 GEO. So that's 850-436. Call it in and we'll play it on the show. And speaking of which, here's a milestone that was called in just the other day.
GEO Talk, this is Bree. Dad and I have just found a 100th GEO cache for Team W. It has only taken us 2.5 years. Our 100th was Plowman Share by Clem's Mob, which is a very interesting cache. And it has its own seat. Thanks for the great show. Bye.
Well, it's not long now till the WWFM number 5, the Worldwide Flash Mob, which is sort of being put together and popularised by Podcacher. And you can check out their podcast. It's a really good weekly podcast all about geocaching, and that's at podcacher.com. But yeah, there's 150 events this time around for the 5th WWFM. And they're in 20 countries. And of course, here in Australia, we got quite a few this time round. And the list starts with here in Sydney, of course, there's going to be Bring Your Poker Face. And that's going to be a fun one where people get to wear masks and play some poker in front of Luna Park, one of the biggest faces or masks in Sydney. Over in Darwin, they're having their very first WWFM. Adelaide is holding a Fahrenheit 451 event, so that's to remember the victims of the Victoria bushfires over in just February just gone. Over in on the Murray, in the Murray-Riverlands region, there's ferry across the Murray. Laughter is the best medicine is another one that's going to be in Canberra, and you get to wear something funny. To the market in Melbourne, that's going to be at the Queen Vic Markets. And over in Perth, Deja Vu, where you get to wear a disguise. So there you go. There's 7 events that are occurring around Australia. If you haven't got yours already up, and maybe here, you know, Hobart and Brisbane, where are yours? You've gotten, I think, until this week maybe to get yours in, or maybe you might have missed the boat. Anyway, they're held in May and November, so check it out and check out the events if you can't get to them to have a look at some of the fun photos from that event, the WWFM 5. Well, you heard me mention at the a little bit earlier about the ban on geocaching in New South Wales National Parks. Now, I've got a bit of an update on what's happening with that situation. A lot of you will probably know that I'm involved with Geocaching New South Wales, which is the association for geocaching in this state. And it's still, you know, taking a bit of time to get off and running. And we've actually got an event that's occurring on the 27th of April. So hopefully if you're in the Sydney region, come along to that. That's the Geocaching 101 event. But we've been in negotiations or in discussions with National Parks and Wildlife Service in New South Wales. And a little bit of an update on what's been happening. Now, we met with the policy group over in Sydney in January, late January of 2009, and gave them a bit of an update on what geocaching is and what it isn't, and what we would hope might occur if the ban on geocaching was lifted. Well, the good news is that the executive director of the Parks and Wildlife Service has agreed to a review of the geocaching policy, and we may see some changes. We may actually see some form of geocaching allowed. Now, they've informed us that the next step will be there's a meeting of the policy reference group, and what they will do is they will have a look at some of the examples that we provided them, particularly the Canadian example, and they're going to discuss that with stakeholders, both internal and external, and there might be a period of public consultation as well. Now, all up, they estimate it's probably going to take about 6 months, so it should be sort of round about late spring, early summer, that we might see some changes, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be allowed to do geocaching in national parks once again. Now, also, another thing that we were in discussions about was the status of virtuals, earth caches, and waypoints for multis. Now, this is where nothing is left behind in the actual park itself, but you know, you might want to use a sign as a way of, you know, directing people to the final cache location, which will be outside the park boundaries. And their response was that a geocaching activity that doesn't leave any object in a park is not geocaching as it's defined under the ban. So therefore, any multi-stage geocaches that involve reading a sign where you find the cache outside, or any virtual caches, including earth caches, are, in the Parks and Wildlife Service's opinion, okay. So that's some good news that hopefully will clarify some things up for people, and at least there's some sort of form of geocaching being allowed at this stage, and hopefully we might see that expanded before the end of the year. Well, I've mentioned a few over the last couple of episodes that we've got a Facebook group. If you're into Facebook and you want to join the GeoTalk community, just type in GeoTalk into the search field, and you can just click the join button and be part of some of the discussions that occur on there. We reached our 100 member milestone, and thanks very much for everyone who's joined in. And our last discussion was looking at cache maintenance. Now, we're going to make that the topic of the next episode on GeoTalk in episode 46. But I've decided to randomly draw someone out from who sort of put a tip or a comment on that discussion, and they're going to win an Idlewise GeoCoin, and they just have to get in touch with me via email within the next 2 weeks. So that's, I think, sort of early May. So you've got 2 weeks from the date of this being published. And the winner is Darren Hancock. So Darren Hancock, if you're listening, drop us an email, geotalk@mac.com, and we'll send that GeoCoin out to you courtesy of Ernie's. Well, that music means it's time for an update on the Wagga Mega Event. Now, the Committee of Riverina Geocaching are pleased to announce that the number of geocachers expressing interest in attending the event has reached the magic 500 mark. And the numbers are continuing to rise, so there's no doubt that this will be Australia's first ever mega event. Now, this is a massive achievement, already considering that the committee have only started this project a few months ago, and there's still just under a year of planning left to go. Now, there's already a lot of activities and entertainment that's being organised and yet to be finalised, but as soon as they've got more details, they'll be posting them up on the event listing page, which will appear on geocaching.com. Now, that could be about a month or two away, so please be patient, but they expect that the wait will well be worth it. Now, the other news from the Riverina Geocaching Committee is that they've decided on the name of the event, and the name is the Oz Mega Wagga Wagga Event. Now, of course, that's reflecting the fact that it's a mega event and the location as well. so you can't go wrong with that. Now, Easter's just passed, so it's about the time that the event's going to be held next year, and the committee are currently researching the accommodation venues in Wagga Wagga to determine their capacity and ability to handle the additional influx of people that's going to occur during the event. Now, there is lots of camping available at the event site, and they're also going to be determining how many people that can accommodate, and they'll give some more details in the next update, which will appear on GeoTalk and also in the forums. They'd like to express their thanks to all of those who have offered assistance and support to the committee already. And as this event of this sort of magnitude is going to need a lot of assistance from the geocaching community. So congratulations, everyone, for making it reach mega event status. And hopefully we'll hear some more news from Riverina Geocaching in the near future. Well, it's almost time to get into the interview for this particular episode, but before we do, we've got the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, and the question is, how many 5-5 caches are there in Australia, and where are they? The answer to that at the end of the podcast.
There's a new cache listed on the site. It's very close as the crow flies. If we get there quick, we'll get the gold, be the first to find. Print the details, read them real close. Look at the hint and description. Coordinates, download them to your GPS. When you don't know which way to go, say way-o, which way do we go? Walk like a geocacher.
Well, in this edition of GeoTalk, we're going to travel over to South Australia, and we're not heading to the capital, we're not heading to Adelaide, we're heading a little bit north of Adelaide to the township of Kadena, and I'm joined by Roger, who's also known as Going There Doing That. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about your geocaching history. When did you get into it, and how did you find out about the sport?
Well, I've been geocaching for about a year now, and I'm a teacher, and one of my fellow teachers at the school I'm at introduced me to it. We were both had just arrived in the town, and we were having a picnic in the centre of the town in the park there, and there's a train that the children play on, an old steam train, and he said to me, "Have you heard of geocaching?" And I said, "Oh, I have. I had vaguely heard about it." And he said, "Well, because I think there's a geocache on that train," and so that sort of got us both intrigued, and we looked into it a bit further, and the geocache unfortunately is no longer on the train, but we did find that, and we've been going full bore geocaching ever since.
So you started a year ago. Where have you gone geocaching? Is it just mainly in the Kadena region, or have you branched out a little bit?
Mainly just around here. When I started, there were less than 10 geocaches in the area. Now there's about probably 80. But I've also, when I go for trips to Adelaide, I do a bit of geocaching there, and went on a holiday up the Flinders Ranges and found some geocaches there, and also over the Barossa Valley we went on a holiday there. Any excuse to go geocaching is a good one.
What do you enjoy most about it?
I like, there's probably two different aspects I like about it. One is to learn the history of a place, like when there's monuments and things like that. My children probably don't like that so much, but I do. They just want to find the box. But I really like, finding out the history of places. Plus, my favourite caches are the puzzle type, and I like a challenge, and I'm into puzzles, and they're the ones I prefer, where you've got to actually do some figuring out before you can actually find the coordinates.
And you have no shortage of those in Adelaide.
There are quite a few of those. I've only actually found one of Zitherin's. His are quite famous, but because I don't really get a lot of time to do that, and I've only found, I think I'm up to 260 caches myself, although I've hidden 51, I think, now, so I've got a pretty good hide-to-find ratio. But it's just, and whenever we go to Adelaide, we tend to be busy, with a list of jobs that we have to do or people we have to see, but I try to slip in as much geocaching as I can.
Now, you mentioned just before that you're a teacher. Have you been able to incorporate geocaching into the classroom?
We have actually. Last year, we ran a series of electives where students could choose things they wanted to do that they were interested in. And three of us who teach there who are into geocaching, we organised a geocaching elective. Well, it was originally only going to be one of the teachers, and there were so many students interested in it because we'd been talking about it in our classes, that three of us had to do it to cater for the number of children. And we set up a bit of geocaching just around the school. We started off just hiding like ice cream pop sticks around the place and gave them GPSs and to find these pop sticks with numbers on them. And eventually we sort of branched out and we actually went to find a couple of real geocaches, but we made sure they were ones that were sort of remote enough that, you know, they wouldn't just be going back and muggling them. That's the only worry we have. And one of the other teachers actually has also, with his class, started some travel bugs travelling, and they're sort of following them as they travel around the place and mapping them. And it's, yeah, the students are quite interested.
What sort of aspects of their learning do you think it enhances?
It's mainly like geography, I suppose, and you can incorporate it with lots of things. With primary school kids, you can do maths, you know, working out, you know, the kilometres and whatever. But I used to actually bring up on the screen in my classroom like Google Earth, and we could see where these places were. And if I had picked up a travel bug or geocoin, I could bring up Google Earth and we could see where they were from, you know, if they were from overseas, and then we could sort of look at where that country is in relation to where we are. And it's just more meaningful to the children than just, you know, learning about some country without, you know, having this thing in your hand that's from there. So, yeah, it's good.
I suppose one of the good things would be if people, when they collect these travel bugs or coins, they take photos of them, because then the kids could sort of get a bit of context into seeing where they are and incorporating them with the map, the Google map.
Yeah, that's always better. I always try to take photos when I have a trackable come through my hands. But, it does make it a lot more interesting.
Hmm. All right, well, tell us a little bit about Kadena, because it's about, an hour or two north of Adelaide?
Yeah, it's about 150 kilometres sort of north-northwest of Adelaide. It's so that's about an hour and a half drive. It's actually at the top of the York Peninsula, the York Peninsula is between Spencer Gulf and St Vincent's Gulf, and it's the peninsula looks like a leg, like, with a foot on the bottom, and we're sort of up towards the top of the leg, I suppose, on the thigh, we would say. And this region here is called the Copper Coast, because it used to be famous for copper mining many years ago. But now it's just like a holiday retreat sort of area, I suppose, and a lot of people from Adelaide are retiring up this way along by the sea, mainly in Wallaroo and Moonta and Port Hughes, which is all part of the Copper Coast area here.
Now, I travelled around there about 15 years ago. There was a huge mouse plague there. You don't get those too often?
No, we certainly have mice here, but we don't. Nothing like the plague proportions back in the early 90s, where there were just carpets of them everywhere. But it is a farming area, and we certainly do have our mice around here. It's very dry at the moment. We really desperately need rain here, but it's a lovely place to be.
What are some of the challenges of geocaching in an area like that? Because we've spoken to a number of people in regional areas, and sometimes they say that because you don't have the number of participants, you therefore sort of don't get the number of caches out there. Do you find that that's an impediment where you are?
It certainly was, but as I say, there used to be less than 10 caches, geocaches actually placed around here. Now there are 80-something, mostly placed by my colleagues at the school I teach at and myself, and we sort of urge each other on to hide some more. And we're sort of doing it to try to encourage people to come to the area as well. We figure they won't come to people from Adelaide won't come to an area like this for geocaching unless there's actually a decent number in the area. And, like, we have over 80 now, and it's we've sort of made a deal with amongst ourselves now that we don't be the first to find each other's caches. We sort of, I don't know, it used to be what we would do is race out soon it was listed, but we actually try to leave that now for other people to find, to sort of attract them into the area. And we, if we pick up trackables elsewhere, we always bring them and place them in a cache back here. So the sort of we like to show off our area, I suppose, to other geocaches.
Now, one of the reasons I got in touch with you is because a few months back, there was someone forwarded me a link to a YouTube video that you posted along with your fellow geocachers called Walk Like a Geocacher. Now, certainly got a lot of hits. Even Podcacher mentioned it. Tell us a little bit about that video and the cache series that you put together that went along with that.
Okay, well, yeah, it was quite interesting. We've had a lot of people commenting, a lot of people looking at the YouTube video. I'm not sure how many hits it has now, but it's phenomenal, really. I started planning a geocache that actually took you to multiple points, collecting sort of clues along the way to find one ultimate cache. And I thought, well, this isn't really going to work. For people aren't going to travel all the way from Adelaide to come up here to spend a whole day to find one cache. So I thought there's got to be a better way of doing a series. So I sort of got the idea in my head about pyramid selling, where, you know, one person talks two or three people into signing up for something and then they sign up other people. And I sort of got this idea in my mind of this pyramid, and I thought, well, this area used to be called the Copper Triangle, so I call it the Copper Pyramid instead, which is, you know, a similar shape. And I came up with the idea of hiding a geocache that then had coordinates to other caches in it, and then those other geocaches had coordinates to others in there, and then they have coordinates to others, and it just builds like that. And I thought, well, people won't mind spending a whole day driving around here finding caches if they're actually getting the numbers for it, I suppose. I know it's not about the numbers, as everyone says, but it's sort of, you know, people wouldn't come here just to find the one, spend all day to find one anyway. So I came up with the idea of the pyramid caching. So I planned it actually back last July, but it took me, and I had worked out all the coordinates and everything, but it took me about 5 months, I suppose, to really, before I actually placed them, mainly because one of the ideas I had, because I sort of don't do things by halves and I like to go over the top, really, I thought I got the idea of making a song, walk like an Egyptian, but it fits in with the pyramid theme, walk like a geocacher, and that would have the clue to another, to where another cache is hidden, which is actually the key to the treasure, which is the ultimate thing you want to find after doing the pyramid series. And you have to do the whole series to find where the treasure is, but you also need this key. So I thought, oh, we'll make this video. We'll get together and have a bit of fun and make this video and put it on YouTube as a clue to the key to the pyramid. And so it took us quite a while to coordinate diaries, I suppose, to all get together to film this. But we did it, and just before Christmas, we got it placed on YouTube. I got all the caches approved, and there's sort of history now. But it's we've had lots of people coming up to find it, and we've had so many comments about it from all around the world. There are forums talking about it in German. I can't even understand what they're saying because they found it. The geocaches in Germany, so. Yeah, it's been great.
Have you had any offers from overseas to put together something similar?
No, I haven't. I've just had lots of people commenting on it, and all the Americans telling me that we say geocache the wrong way, but I disagree, but I don't want to get into an argument over it.
Now, I noticed when I looked at your YouTube channel that you actually were part of a group that put together something for Vegemite. Now, those who are outside of Australia, Vegemite is a bit of a national icon. It's a spread that people put on their toast or on their bread, and that most Americans then spit out in disgust afterwards because it's a very salty thing. Tell us just briefly a little bit about that video you did. I think that was in 2000, was it?
It was, yes. It was at the school I was teaching at previously. We went in a competition for Vegemite, and it was in the year 2000. Everyone was looking towards the future, and they set a competition where you make a video of up to 2 minutes that incorporates the Vegemite song, and it had a few other requirements as well. And it was for primary schools right around Australia, and I was teaching, I was a primary school teacher at the time, and my class decided to go in and with another class from my school, and we actually won the national award and won $78,000 for our school by making that video. And so, yeah, anyway, but that's, I've sort of been interested in video production for years, so, and I used to do some wedding videos and things like that, so yeah, so that sort of history of the other video on there anyway.
And of course, it would mean that with your interest in video, we should be expecting another one down the track. Have you got any plans to put together another geocaching video?
We certainly have got one planned. We have recorded the music for it as well, the song for it, because we have another series of geocaches in the area here. We're up to number 18, I think, in this series, but we've got a lot more planned. We're calling it the Education Series, E-D-U-C-A-C-H-I-O-N, because four of us who are teachers in the area, we are into geocaching. So we thought we'd put some puzzle caches out there where you have to do a particular subject and in a year level, you know, do like a little lesson and do some homework, I suppose you would call it, to figure out where the geocache is. And it's all related to where it's hidden as well. There's all links there that you don't really know until you actually solve it. But so we've recorded another song based on Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall. And it goes, "We don't need no education," but we've changed it to "We're all going geocaching." And we're actually planning the video for that now. And probably within a month or two, we would like to actually hold an event cache to film the video for that. So we'll be looking for geocaches from Adelaide or from wherever to come and be part of that video. After the, you know, or the reaction we've had to our first one, we thought, well, there are people who signed up to our YouTube channel who are waiting for another one, so this will be it. And it should be quite interesting. We can get up to, it's based around, we're going to be based around our school, and so we can have some geocaches getting up to some things that students might get up to in class. But I won't say too much more about it, but just watch out for that event cache when we list it, probably within, as I say, a month or two.
Well, we'll all be looking forward to it. And as you say, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people watching your channel. And it sounds like you guys are having a heck of a lot of fun over there in Kadena on the Copper Coast. And I think GeoTalk might have to head over there in the next few months and catch up with you guys and see what you're up to.
We'd love to have you over here.
Well, Roger, look, thanks very much for taking the time out to chat to us on GeoTalk, and all the best with your geocaching adventures.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Well, it's time now for a geocaching tip. Now, I've still got a bag of fire tags to give away, courtesy of geocachestore.com.au. Where it's a great place you can grab your geocaching gear, anything from ammo cans through to, well, fire tacks and micro containers and so forth. So thanks very much to the guys over at geocachestore.com.au. If you've got a tip, it's very simple. You just need to email it in, and we'd love to hear your voice. So you can record it on your computer and email it to geotalk@mac.com, or even easier, just pick up the phone. You know, write a few notes down and dial up 02-850-436. So that's 02-850-436. Well, seeing as no one else has got a tip for this episode, I might as well throw in one of my own. Now, I've had a Garmin GPS ever since I've started geocaching back in, was about 6.5 years ago, and always on the lookout for maps. Now, I feel a bit funny about using, you know, maps from other people that, you know, I haven't actually bought, but at the same time, I can't justify spending so much. And a few years ago, there was a project called OpenStreetMap that started, which is fantastic. It's a bit like a Wikipedia of maps. So you can help draw in roads and tracks that you might trace over time. And if you find any errors, you can fix those up. And just recently, in about the last 6 to 7 months, they started releasing maps, ready-made maps for the Garmin GPS. And even more recently, those maps have been made routable. Now, you can go to a couple of websites, and I'm going to give you the link in the show notes to one in particular. Otherwise, you can write this down. It's garmin.na1400.info /routable.php. So that's garmin.na1400.info/routable.php, or go to geotalkpodcast.com and you can find the link in the show notes there. And what that does is it gives you a map of the world based on OSM, and it divides the map up into different tiles. And you can use the right click, or I think it's the control click on the Macintosh, to highlight the areas of the world that you want to download the maps of. And you type in your email address, and a few minutes later you'll get an email with a link for you to download an installer for the Garmin Map Source for Windows, for Garmin Roadmap for Mac OS X, and a combined image for direct uploading into your GPS device. So check that out. Go to the link in the show notes from geotalkpodcast.com, and there you go. You can get a free map for your Garmin, and the great thing is it's updated daily. So if you find a mistake while you go out hiking or driving on the weekend, go to the website, make the correction, and a few days later you can download it again and it's all fixed up. So check that out. Well, now it's time to have a quick look at some of the events that are occurring around the country over the next few weeks. On the 25th of April, on Anzac Day, is the Central Victorian Get-Together number 3, and that's going to be held in Ballarat in Central Victoria. On the 26th of April is an event in Oberon being held by JABS. And also on the 26th is the Hunt and Munch, which is being held out near Hobart in southern Tasmania. On the 27th of April, on Monday night, will be the Geocaching 101 event that's being held by the Geocaching New South Wales Association. And also on the 27th will be Puzzlecaching 101 with Zitheran, and that's going to be over in Adelaide. And on the 30th of April is a pub lunch, which is being held at the Marble Bar in South Australia. So check out those events, and hopefully you get along to them. Well, it's time to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and I got two emails for this particular episode. First of all, an email from Wayne. I think it's over in the US. He says, thanks very much for the Canberra episode. It was great to listen, and well done. He's been an avid listener of the show now for over a year, and it actually helped him find some geocaches, some great geocaches, on his trip from Brisbane down to Coffs Harbour in April of 2008. And that's from Wayne, who also runs a podcast called Blast Radius Woods Ball. I think it's all about, paint fighting game. Can't think of the name of it right now. Paintball, that's it. So we might give a link for his podcast in the show notes. Check that out if you're into that sort of activity. Another email from Stephen, also known as Steba, and he wants to know if it would be possible for someone to be a roving reporter at Zitheran's event, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. He wants to find out a bit more about puzzle caching. He's always been racking his brains with the Canberra puzzles, and even though he doesn't get to Adelaide, he'd like to hear a little bit about some of the puzzles that are going on over there. Well, Stephen, we got in touch with Zitheran, and hopefully he's going to record some of it. And he said if it doesn't turn out, he'll re-record it at home. But he says he'll be providing some tips that come out of that meeting. So stay tuned for those. Hopefully we'll hear from those soon. If you want to drop an email into GeoTalk, it's very easy. Just go to the website and you can click on the mail link, or just go to geotalk@mac.com, or you can call in if you like, 02 800 50 436. Love to hear from you. Well, that's all we've got for this particular episode of GeoTalk, but before we head off, time to give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode. And the question was, how many 5.5 geocaches are there in Australia? And their answer is 7. Now, there are 3 in New South Wales. That's Drop Dead Gorgeous by Hound Dog Snifter and Snafu ADV, I think that is. Newbie's View CP2 by Team AAA, and Buckley's by The Bronze and Mix. In Queensland, you'll also find 3. That's Dead Reckoning's Treasure by Dead Reckoning, Tastes Like Failure by Lieutenant Sniper, and Where Eagles Nest by Koroi Scouts. And finally, there is 1 5.5 cache being hidden in Victoria, and that's Bedeviled by Derringer. So there you go. Maybe the people over in WA, South Australia and Tassie have got a bit of work to do to hide some 5.5s. In our next episode, we're going to have a look at cache maintenance. See how you can spruce up your caches before wintertime. Make sure that they don't get too moldy from the water that gets in there. If you've got any tips on that particular topic, don't forget to email or give us a call. Well, until next time, safe geocaching.